This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs.
They call me Help! They call me Stacey! They call me Her! They call me Jane!
This is episode number 48 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
And we are back after an action-packed weekend. So much went on. We all got to play some Magic, I think. And there was a lot of, I'm trying not to say bullshit that happened this weekend, but it was bullshit. Let's just call it what it was. But let's talk about some positive things first. Our woman of excellence this week is Morgan Wentworth. She is a young lady who we've talked about on the show before. She started off as a listener. She sent us a listener question back when we had Johnny Bailey on the show. And then shortly after, she started making her own content. She's a level 2 judge from Minneapolis, Minnesota. She is a part of Gathering Magic. She does a series called Drafting with Morgan. You can find her on Gathering Magic, and you can also find her on YouTube, where she has over 1,600 YouTube subscribers. So she's doing a wonderful job. She recently posted a video this weekend about being a woman in Magic and talking about some of her feelings about respecting other people. And she even topped it off with a poem, which was incredibly lovely. So if you want to support her, you can find her on Twitter at MTGValkyrie. That is V-A-L-K-Y-R-I-E. Before we get into what everybody else did this weekend, why don't we talk about what we did? So, Hallie, you played in a PPTQ, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so do you feel like telling us how it went?
Sure. I got 9th on Breakers, which is always a rough feeling, but I did have fun in the event. I did a sealed PPTQ. It was 7 rounds. I ended up 5-1-1, which is usually good enough to make top 8, but because I didn't intentionally draw in, I took an unintentional draw earlier in the tournament. I did not have very good tiebreakers. My pool was very good. I had a pretty decent green-white support deck with good old Linvala to top it off, one of the best cards in this limited format. And my draw was against a guy who had 2 Gideons in his pool.
Ooh.
Yep, he had a Gideon and a foil Gideon for the rubbins. And we ended up unintentionally drawing because in the 3rd game, he played a turn 4 Gideon and just kept making tokens, wasn't attacking me. I couldn't really attack him because he had all these tokens to block with. And he then ultimated his Gideon, got an emblem, played the other Gideon, kept making tokens, made an emblem. And then at this point, he has 2 emblems, and he plays an Inverter of Truth, which is the Eldrazi that exiles your library and then turns your graveyard into your library.
Oh, we've met.
Yeah. And, yeah, that was difficult. He cast the Inverter of Truth, and then time was called, and I had a Linvala in play, but I still didn't have very good attacks. Like, I was able to tap the Inverter of Truth with some of my allies and get in for a little bit of damage, but it was the kind of thing where if I had more turns to play the game, I would have won the match, but that's just not how it worked out. Played really well and won, like I said, most of my other matches, but it was kind of a tough break for me.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I know you've been working really hard, and I know you just released you did another version of your Fearless Inventory. And it sounds like you really have been redoubling your efforts to do well, and I'm really rooting for you, and I hope you can do that.
Thank you. Yeah, I am trying really hard. You know, I have to acknowledge Emma Handy for putting out her own Fearless Magical Inventory. That definitely got me back to thinking about what I could improve on also, and I think it's a really great way to take stock of how you're doing in Magic.
Yeah, I freely admit that I don't think I could ever write one. Like, I know it's such a cliche word to use, but I think it really is brave of you to put yourself out there like that. And it's interesting because I put myself out there in so many different ways, but I don't know if I would ever be able to put myself under a magnifying glass like that the way that you and Emma and others have. And it kind of scares me to even think about it. Like, in terms of my Magic performance, at least. But, and fun fact, Emma is now a part of Gathering Magic.
Yay!
She was recently picked up by Evidence, so she's going to start writing for us very soon, and that's wonderful because we're all big fans of hers. And you also, Hallie, decided on, you think you found a deck for Standard, yeah?
Yeah, still have to do a little bit of testing this week, but I've really been enjoying Bant Collected Company. It's definitely right up my alley. I really enjoy playing tempo decks, and it has a pretty good rally matchup, so I'm excited to give it a try this week.
So let me ask you this. So what is the reason that you would play this over rally? Because, you know, some would argue that this is basically just a rally deck without the rally. So what is the advantage to playing this?
I don't know that it's necessarily a rally deck without the rally. I mean, they both have the Coco engine and they both have a degree of graveyard recursion. Rally obviously has Rally the Ancestors. This deck has Jaces to flashback cards from your graveyard, and it has Den Protectors and Deathmist Raptors, so you have that whole engine going. I just really think that this deck suits my play style very well. I like playing tempo decks, I like playing flyers. I really enjoy playing with Den Protector, I really enjoy playing with Reflector Mage. Reflector Mage is great. I mean, that's a card that you get in both decks, but I feel like this deck feels very me, and I haven't felt that way about any deck that I've played in a really long time.
Mm-hmm. Now, we did a group stream yesterday. You can actually go back and watch the video on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/thegfbracket. We played 5 rounds in a league together with the deck, and what did you take away from that experience, or like, what do you think you need to work on?
Definitely a lot more practice with the deck. There are a lot of lines. There's a lot of very precise sequencing and timing. I know one thing that Katie brought up was that rallying on the opponent's turn, or not rallying, sorry, casting Collected Company on the opponent's turn is frequently the right thing to do. Most of the time it is, sometimes it isn't, and figuring out the timing of that is very crucial, obviously. But you know, there were a lot of situations, just because I hadn't played the deck before, where I wasn't sure of the precise sequencing in a lot of situations, and I'm really glad that we recorded the stream, because now I can go back and watch it, and, you know, I've already watched one or two of the matches we lost and thought about things we could have done differently and ways that we could have at least, if not won the match, then at least increased our chances of winning.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I'll certainly be rooting for you in Houston this past weekend, or this coming weekend.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, Chris, you've also started kind of putzing around with a new deck. You call it Red, White, and Blurn.
Yep.
What is that exactly?
Okay. I wanted to make something that was similar to a burn deck, but I wanted to give it my own kind of flavor. So it does have some counters in it, because of course it does. So I do have some counter magic in there. But basically, I wanted to cast a bunch of burn spells and be able to also counter things and set off things with prowess. So I have Storm Chaser Mage in there to get prowess with. Also, Monastery Swift Spear, which I might be taking out in favor of Reflector Mage, just because Reflector Mage gets rid of so many things and it's so powerful, and I pretty much curve out at 3, so I'm pretty much good to go. It also has Goblin Guides in there to be able to, you know, see what your opponent's got coming up next and everything. I put in Probes recently, also to kind of get an idea of what was in their hand. People keep telling me to put Delver in there, but I just don't want to.
Because it feels like a Delver deck.
I know. I know. I mean, that could also be a possibility if it was something I wanted to putz with, but I've never cast a Delver of Secrets. I don't even know what I even do.
It feels pretty good, and I'm not even a blue mage.
It feels really good. It feels really good to blind flip them.
So that might be something to consider. But right now, the majority of the deck centers around Goblin Guide, Storm Chaser Mage, Monastery Swift Spear. It has 3 Snapcasters in it. And then just a bunch of different burn spells, like I said, counter magic. Path to Exile main deck, because there's so many aggressive decks to deal with that it just makes sense to have it in there. The sideboard is a work in progress, because I haven't really given a lot of thought to Eldrazi, because I haven't really had to face it very much. But as it's becoming more prevalent, I probably am going to have to rethink my plan with that. I mean, obviously, Path helps get rid of them, but there's other things that I'm concerned about, so it's just a matter of, can I get there faster? I had to play against Soul Sisters on Friday, and I was like, what's the point in even playing this fucking match? Like, there's no way I can get there. So, I tried, but no. You know, once they get so far ahead, there's no use of even trying anyway. But, it's something I've been playing around with. It was just an idea that I thought up at work. I just get these, like, random sparks of ideas in my brain, and then I feel like I need to play around with it. So this is one of the newer ideas that I've come up with. And it's been pretty fun. People seem to really dig it. So yeah, if you want the list, I'll be sure to put a link so that people can tool around with it if they want to, or see if it's their jam. But I'm really having a lot of fun playing it. I never thought I would get so much glee out of, you know, casting a lightning helix, or even, you know, a lava spike, and now I see how the other side lives.
Yeah, that's how I felt the other day when we did the Pro Tour Gauntlet, and we were piloting Blue Moon, and I was like, I've never been on the other side of a Snapcaster before, or on the other side of an Electrolyze before, and I was like, this is kind of fun. Like, I think I understand now why you guys like your blue deck so much. I was like, I could get into this action.
Yeah, it's a nice feeling.
Yeah, it's a very nice feeling. It's funny, Chris, that you mentioned Soul Sisters being bad for you, because I remember last year when we were dealing with Treasure Cruise being out of hand before it was banned, I remember going to GP Omaha and there were Delver decks everywhere. And Soul Sisters had been coming out of the woodwork because it was a foil for Delver. So all of these Delver decks were coming out of the woodwork and they were abusing Treasure Cruise and they were, you know, using Forked Bolts and Snapcasters and crazy things like that. And Soul Sisters was becoming, you know, it was very much a metagame deck where it was a nice answer to Delver, because it was able to survive Delver's, you know, really aggressive burn and the damage they do and everything else. And so it's interesting that we're in another situation where people are calling for a ban, and yet Soul Sisters is kind of creeping up again, where it's like, it's just that deck where when shit's bad, play Soul Sisters.
Right, exactly. And I think that, you know, with the whole Eldrazi menace, so to speak, going on, I think it is a good time to play different fringe decks and just kind of see what works.
Yeah, Soul Sisters, it can be bad for me. I'm capable of coming up with, I can do up to 35 damage with Lightning Storm, depending on how many lands that I play. And so if they gain too much life, there's just no way I can win. So it usually ends up being a race, like most of my matchups are, but a race on a, normally it's a race that they don't kill me first. And in this situation, it's a race that they don't gain more life than I can do damage. I played in a Legacy League for the first time since they debuted. I, of course, took Dredge in, and I finished 3-2. I lost my first two and then won the last three, so I was feeling really, really good about it. Had a lot of fun. I was a little rusty, like I had forgotten what certain cards do, and my sequencing was kind of borked, but it felt really good to just be dredging again. There were a couple really memorable moments. I ended up facing a Merfolk opponent, and so I had some really, really good dredges on turn two. And then when I went to pass the turn, my opponent cast Warping Whale. And at first I was like, girl, this is Legacy. Like, what you doing with that standard card? And they decided to make a token. Now, for those playing the home game, if a creature enters the graveyard that my opponent controls, all of my Bridge from Below's get exiled. So I had all four bridges in the graveyard. I was very happy about this. I was like, oh, I'm going to make a lot of zombies. And so they cast Warping Whale, they make the Eldrazi, and then they're like, sacrifice the Eldrazi. And so all four of my bridges got exiled, and I was a very sad panda. And I was just like, why are you playing this card? And come to find out that it is seeing Legacy play, that 12 Post uses it, Goblins uses it, because it's good against things like Terminus. It's good for exiling cards like Deathrite Shaman, an unflipped Delver of Secrets, and it is a thing. And I was just like, well, fuck me. So now I have to look out for Warping Whale, because apparently it's a thing. It's another thing I have to worry about. And then I did get a chance to face my last last opponent in the league was playing Legacy Eldrazi.
Oh, I heard about that today.
Oh, girl. So again, I had that feeling of, what you doing here? Like, are you lost? This is Legacy. Come on now. That's something I've got to get over, by the way, speaking of fearless inventories. But so my opponent's playing that. At first, they do the Chalice for one, and I'm just fucked. So I'm like, all right, next game. So then they do Chalice for one again, but I have a Lion's Eye Diamond in my hand, and I have a really good hand otherwise. So I end up playing the diamond. I crack the diamond, dump my hand, and start dredging. So everything's really good. So then my opponent decides to cast a Graft Digger's Cage. For those following along at home, Graft Digger's Cage costs one. So I see the Graft Digger's Cage on the stack, and I'm like, oh, shit. And then I see the Chalice for one, and then I see the Graft Digger's Cage get countered. So if you're going to play a Chalice for one, make sure that your Graveyard Hate also does not cost one. And I had a feeling like my opponent didn't really have a lot of experience against Dredge, because then they cast a Chalice for zero. And my Ikarids and my Narcomoebas don't cost mana. They just kind of enter the battlefield. So I don't know if that was their plan, but a Chalice for zero doesn't really do anything against Dredge unless it's like turn one and I can't Lion's Eye. So I thought that was really cute. And then they played some additional things like Thorn of Amethyst. And then by then I was so far ahead that it really wasn't a big deal. So I wasn't really impressed with Eldrazi in a Legacy capacity. But overall, I had a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to playing some more Legacy. I think I might even build Enchantress at some point and get in there. And I just really enjoyed it. I don't get to play nearly enough Legacy. Today, Wizards made a big announcement. Conspiracy 2 is coming.
Yay!
This set seems to have a lot of emphasis on Hallie's friend, Brago.
Oh, yeah, that's my boy.
The minute I saw that, I was like, oh, Hallie's going to be putting us through some hell. supposedly, the plotline's going to revolve around Brago. I think Brago's like the villain of the set.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, and so the plot line, I guess, is going to be, you know, whether you choose to ally with Brago or whether or not you decide to take him down. And I'm actually really looking forward to Conspiracy this time around. Are you guys?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. I feel better about it this time around. You know, the first time I played Conspiracy, I made the mistake of having my first draft be at a GP. And Conspiracy is very much like a commander set where you have that social contract where it's like, you know, you go into it thinking it's going to be really casual. You're just going to have a really good time. And then you end up being in a pod with people who just want to kill you. And so my first time playing Conspiracy was not very enjoyable for me. But I think I did it with you, Chris, and Nick. Mm-hmm. And we had a really good time and it was just really casual. And now that I actually know what conspiracies do and things like that, I feel better equipped to play it this time around. SCG Louisville was the big event this weekend. It was a Modern Open. 20 out of the top 32 decks were Eldrazi decks.
Ugh. Blech.
Various shades of Eldrazi decks. There was green-red, there was blue-red, there was colorless, there was white-blue. It feels like white-blue has become the flavor of the moment. Which is good news for me, because the white-blue version does not run any chalices, usually. And so that's a really good thing. They're also not running any Simian Spirit Guides, which is nice. And I just feel like it's a better matchup for me, so I'm not sad to see that happen. But this led to a lot of talk about an emergency ban, that things are just going too far off the rails. Aaron Forsyth went on Twitter today and confirmed that there are no plans for an emergency ban, but it doesn't sound like he ruled out the possibility of a ban coming around the usual time with Shadows of Rinnestrad. Do you guys think that we're there? Like, do you think that a ban is on the horizon?
I think that an emergency ban is not necessary, but a ban of some kind, or like some way to deal with these decks better, is necessary. Like, 20 out of 32 is a lot. And they are all different colors, and they're all kind of doing their own thing. There was a Bant one, and that's all nice and cool, but I don't want to play against this for forever. I hope that somebody gets it under control. But somebody did point out on Twitter, they were like, well, you know, somebody does enjoy playing this, so let them have their fun for 3 months, and then, you know, they'll ban it eventually. But, like, for those 3 months, what do we do? Do we invest in it so it can get banned, or do we just sit here and play decks that lose to it, or do we just not play? Because I'm kind of leaning towards that at the moment, but yeah, I think something's got to change.
The day two metagame at SCG Lu, 47.7% of the decks that made day two were classified as Eldrazi decks.
That's absurd.
With the second highest being Affinity at only 7.7%.
Yeah, I agree that I don't think there's going to be an emergency ban, but I think when Wizards makes these decisions, it's usually with the health and diversity of the format in mind, and I don't think they could allow a format that is almost half Eldrazi to exist for much longer.
Do you think that enough time has passed? Like, do you think that we have enough proof? I mean, it really has been, this was the first major event after the Pro Tour. So we have the Pro Tour, we have the Open, and people are also pointing to Magic Online, noticing that, you know, interestingly enough, blue-white Eldrazi has not really become as popular online. Like the version online that is seeing the most play seems to still be the Pro Tour version, the colorless mm-hmm. version with Simeon Spirit Guides and Chalices. So I thought that was very interesting. But, you know, do we really have enough evidence to say that this is a thing? You know, is there still time to give people time to adapt, give the format time to adapt? Like, can we really call it only 3 weeks in, 2 weeks in?
I don't think so. I mean, I guess the question is, have people really tried very hard to deal with this deck? Like, I mean, have people really changed up their, you know, sideboards? Have they changed up their decks to plan ahead for the possibility of facing Eldrazi? Or are they just looking to complain about something? Because it seems like anytime something comes along and dominates the format, everyone's crying to have anything and everything banned. And I just feel like right out of the gate, that was the situation with the Eldrazi deck. Now, I'm not a fan. Believe me, I'm not. But I just want to know, you know, how well people have actually prepared for this, or if they're just looking for something to complain about.
See, and I kind of am on the other side of the fence. Like, I feel like, you know, when a deck comes out of the Pro Tour is really good, people are like, okay, this is going to be the deck to beat. And you either join them or you try and beat them. And I feel like people are attempting to beat them, but it's not going very well. You know, with the rise of Affinity and Blood Moon. And it's just like, this deck just attacks from so many different angles. And everybody's like, well, just play Path to Exile. And it's like, well, you know, four paths in a deck is only four paths for every single one of their creatures. You know, when they're all big and hitting you, it's, you know, that's not really enough, even with four Snapcasters. But so I guess I'm just kind of on the other side of the fence, where I think, you know, 50% of the meta is absurdly high. Like, that's just out of control proportion. And so I guess I think that it's gotta go on some level. I don't like it sticking around.
Yeah, I'm on Katie's side of the fence for sure. I think there are definitely cards in the format that deal with it, but they seem inadequate. You know, Katie mentioned Path. There's also Spreading Seas. There's Blood Moon. There's Ensnaring Bridge. But so many of these cards either come down late because the deck can have these very aggressive starts, or, you know, the best Ensnaring Bridge deck in the format is Lantern Control, and it's not very popular, and it's very difficult to pilot. So I don't know that there are that many answers out there. I mean, I think a good analogy to make is that, you know, there are other fast mana decks in the format, but the fastest fast mana deck in the format that isn't Eldrazi is Tron, and the worst thing Tron can do is play a turn 3 Karn, which, while pretty bad, you know, a turn 3 Karn, is not necessarily winning the game. When we see Eldrazi powering out these huge creatures and having a huge board presence by turn 3... I mean, that's something I think to be concerned about.
Yeah, I feel a little far removed from the discussion because, as I said before, I have yet to really face this deck. You know, I played at regionals, didn't face it once. I've played in two modern leagues, which is 10 rounds of Magic, haven't faced it at all. I went to FNM twice since the Pro Tour, have not faced it at all. And so I'm still really eager to face it. Like, I'm looking at it like, let me at it. Like, I want to try it. I want to see how I do. You know, I want to see if I can maybe adjust my sideboard to compensate. You know, I'm not saying that my experience is universal, but it's very hard for me to to sympathize when I haven't been there. You know, we talked about GP Omaha, and I remember what it was like to play against these Delver decks and seeing how these decks would bury you in card advantage with Treasure Cruise. And by experiencing it, I was able to be like, all right, girl, this needs to go. But when you haven't faced it, it's really hard to get on that bandwagon. So I'm still really looking forward to even playing it. I do agree, though, kind of with Chris in that, you know, I am seeing people try, where it's like, you know, you're seeing people are writing articles. Brian DeMars did one today about Abzan Company. You know, he feels Abzan Company is a really good matchup. You know, Travis Wu has been working really hard on Living End. I think Living End has a decent shot, as I've said before. Raphael Levy was talking about Lone Pox. He recently wrote an article about Zombie Loam, and it went 5-0 in a league. You know, we are seeing people try. Sam Black played Lantern Control. You know, there are decks out there that I think stand a chance, and I think that they're part of the problem, I think, is that they're just not very likable decks. You know, these are decks that people are not really happy to pick up. You know, you even say you're playing Living End, or you say you're playing Lantern Control, and you sort of get this ugh response. But, you know, if that's what it's come down to, you know, I think that there are answers. I just think that people either don't want to play them, or because the format's expensive, it's a little difficult to just pick up a new deck because shit's kind of gone haywire. I do think, however, if, you know, Detroit is fucked. Like, if we go to Detroit in 2 weeks and it's still, I think there's even additional modern GPs happening that weekend. I'm not sure which ones they are, but I could have sworn somebody said that there was at least another modern GP happening at the same time. I think if we come away from the Detroit weekend and we're still seeing these results, I might be a little more in favor of a ban. But right now, as of the Monday we record today, I just don't think enough time has passed. And I do think it's a little, there's a little bit of a panic happening. At SCG Louisville, there were a number of judge calls that were made, specifically having to do with spreading seas. I watched Mrs. Mulligan's feature match, which we'll certainly talk about soon, but, you know, a lot of things came up, Katie, that I had never heard of, and it seemed like some of the viewers hadn't either, so I was wondering if you might be able to walk us through some of the specific interactions. So the first one was spreading seas put on top of a legendary land. So, like, let's say you put spreading seas on an Eye of Ugin, and then all of a sudden you draw another Eye of Ugin, and then you attempt to play it. Do you have to sacrifice the Eye of Ugin that has a seas on it, or is it an island for all intents and purposes?
So in this case, you get to choose. So it still is named Eye of Ugin, and it is still a legendary land. The super type of legendary is not changed by it becoming an island. And so it's basically just the same as if you had two Eye of Ugins with nothing going on. So you get to choose which one goes to the graveyard.
Okay, so you'd probably choose the one that has the enchantment on it and then go, wee, I've got a good Eye of Ugin again.
That's what I would do.
Would you do the wee too?
Yeah, probably. I'd put my hands up in the air and wave them like I just didn't care.
I'm down with that. I'm down with that. And then there was Spreading Seas and Tron, because apparently there was somebody who posted on Reddit, and he said, and I actually found a blog post from the judge's blog about this, that he had tried to put Spreading Seas on his opponent's Tron piece, and there were a couple of judges that said, well, that's really cute, girl, but it's still technically in Urza's whatever. Your opponent still technically has Tron, and this sucks for you. And come to find out that shouldn't have been the case at all, that should have turned Tron off. And can you kind of explain that a little bit?
Yeah, this is a really common misconception. And I actually remember hearing about this when I was studying for my L1 test a few years ago, and I was confused. And I think it's an easy thing to get confused about. But basically, how it works is that all of the Tron pieces say, if you have, you know, Mine, Tower, Power Plant, whatever it may be, you get to tap for more mana. And a lot of people think that that refers to the name of the card, but it actually refers to the permanent type of the card. It doesn't say, if you control a land named Mine, Tower, Power Plant. It just says, if you have these three, you get to do this. And so when you play Spreading Seas, it changes the land type from Urza's Power Plant, which is a land type now, into island. So that land type is no longer there, so Tron should not work.
Okay, so when you say land type, you mean the wording between the artwork and the rules text, that little narrow bar.
Yep, so it says, you know, land, dash, and then on the updated versions of the lands, at least in the Oracle, it says, you know, Urza's Power Plant. And that's now its own land type. And so that little bit right there just gets changed to saying, you know, island in this case. And then now it's just blue. And you don't get to play your big creatures.
Okay, so the takeaway is that Spreading Seas does turn Tron off then.
Yes.
Okay, all right, good to know, good to know. And then there was something that I'm still not really clear about, so I'm really hoping you could help me here. The opponent had an Eldrazi Displacer, Mrs. Mulligan had a Master of Waves with a couple of tokens out. The opponent thought, oh, hey, I'm just going to blink the Master of Waves. The Master of Waves is going to leave play. All of those elementals are going to be 1/0s, and they're all going to die. And apparently that didn't happen. So can you walk me through why that didn't happen? Because I just assumed it was going to work.
Yeah, so when you activate Eldrazi Displacer, you get to blink your creature, and then it comes back in right away, basically within that same sentence. And the game only looks to see what's messed up on the board every time a player would receive priority. And that's called state-based effects, or state-based actions. And so when the Master of Wave leaves, you're kind of in the middle in this, like, dead zone where the game's just kind of taking a break. And then when the Master of Waves comes back in and that entire blinking ability resolves, then the game is like, okay, is there anything we need to clean up here? Is there anything we need to fix? And since Master of Waves is, you know, +0/+1 ability is happening, or +1/+0, the elementals are still alive at that point. So the game can't check within, when nobody has priority, the game's not really checking to see if there's anything wrong that needs to be fixed. And since that all happens before somebody gets priority, Master of Waves and all your little elementals get to live.
So if I was to use a removal spell, so let's say I use Dismember, and I target the Master with Dismember, so that's me having priority, so I'm using my priority to put a Dismember on the Master, correct?
Yep, when you cast it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then the opponent gets priority to respond to it?
Yes.
Okay. And assuming they do nothing, so then the Master dies, and then when the priority gets passed back to me after it's dead, then you're saying the game checks for it, there is no Master, and then the elementals will die.
Yeah, it's right before you receive priority.
But because that didn't happen with just the blink still happened when the opponent had it, that's why there was no check.
Correct.
Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's not so bad. But now we have to talk about the bad.
Oh, no. Bring it on.
Man. All right, here we go. So Mrs. Mulligan, who we love, got a feature match, which is an awesome thing. And I was watching the feature match and was very happy for her. I think it was actually her second feature match. She had won the first round, but I guess her opponent was a judge and didn't drop in time, and he was needed on the floor, and so he bailed, and she essentially won. So she didn't really, I don't think she went on camera for that, but she did end up having two feature matches. But the camera angle on her feature match was a little unfortunate. Mm-hmm. She happened to be wearing a tank top, which there's nothing wrong with, but the camera kind of, it appeared to just have a really unflattering angle. Needless to say, there were some boys who couldn't handle such a thing, and so there were some really crude comments made about her appearance in the chat. There were some screenshots that were taken and posted on Twitter. And one young man in particular, I'm assuming it's a young man, because I would hate to think that a woman would send another woman these tweets. But there were people who reached out to her on Twitter, and there was one individual in particular who had some very not nice things to say, and he said some things like, "Who the fuck wears a tank top to Magic? I bet she did it on purpose, so I guess we all win." They sent another tweet that said, "I'm not complaining. It's a nice refresher from all of the sweaty dudes. And here's the best part. But also try to remember that little kids watch, so have a bit of class, would ya? Thanks." Mm-mm. I had to go for a walk. Like, I saw this, and I was just like, I'm going to say something really not Christian right now, so I'm going to go for a walk. but this was ludicrous, you know, the idea that... But what did you guys think about this?
I want to say that I think that she handled this person really well. Like, I thought all of her responses were just so classy, and I was like, you go, Miss Mulligan, you go. So I want to start out by saying that she's pretty badass in the way that she took care of it. But I don't want to start. Somebody else can start.
I was very, very, very infuriated when I saw what that really mean person said to her on Twitter. I was actually at work, so I was only catching part of her feature match. But I was like, oh, here's a high note. I'm so happy for her. And then I saw what this asshole had to say, and I was like, really? And the fact that they felt the need to, like, also go and tell other people who were trying to help promote her and bring her up and, you know, let her shine, to also tell them, like, what they thought of her. And at the end of the day, I just don't understand what you're trying to accomplish other than to be a dick. Because, you know, was it unfortunate that, yes, you know, the camera, you know, was showing down her shirt? Yeah, that's really unfortunate. But, you know, at the same time, like, we have boobs. Unless you're going to, like, move the camera to, like, a different angle or something, it might just, you know, end up like that. If she wasn't wearing a tank top, we wouldn't have seen down her shirt at all. But that is certainly her prerogative to wear whatever the fuck she wants. You know, it's not like she rolled up in the place, like, just wearing a G-string. I mean, she rolled
up
in there.
Or pasties.
Right.
Blue Manna pasties. Just.
Yeah, I mean, she rolled up in there what she is comfortable wearing and that she wears to every event while she's streaming. That is her. And that's what she likes to wear, which is what I also told him because I couldn't just hold back and not say anything because I was just so angry with him. And I just don't know, you know, again, why he even brought it up, why he brought up, you know, oh, well, kids watch this show. Like, well, what was she doing? I mean, was she, like, flailing her boobs in front of the camera? No. They're part of our bodies. They are there. You know, why should they have to be, you know, locked up and closeted? You know, I just don't understand. At the end of the day, we should be proud of who we are, what we have, male or female, I don't care. You know, you should not have to hide anything about who you are to please anyone else. And, you know, from what I did see of her feature match, she was just totally her. Nice and sweet and awesome and all these things. And the fact that someone tried to, you know, call her a hoe bag and bring her down was just bullshit. And, you know, I was also really happy with how she handled it. And she was like, yep, this is who I am. This is what I'm about. You want to know more about me? Here, you should watch my stream. And instead, you know, just goes over dude's fucking head and he's just like, doo, 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 and just keeps on going. And it's like, hello, you obviously have missed the point. And I just wish, you know, that it had never happened, but it was nice to see people on the internet kind of put him on blast and be like, hey, you know, you really fucked up.
And can I also add, she brought her own tokens.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. They were from Cardamajigs. I mean, do you realize, you know, that's one of my biggest pet peeves, people who can't be bothered to bring their own tokens, or people who assume that the judges are just going to provide them. Oh, no. When she played that Master Wave, she's like, oh, I got this. And I was just like, you go, Mrs. Mulligan. Like, you show them how it's done. Like, bring your shit. I was so happy for her.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really upset by this also. I mean, as we've already said, you mean, the person who harassed her on Twitter, the things he said were completely uncalled for, and he had no place saying things like that. But, you know, I am really glad to see that, you know, the people who were harassing her are in the minority, it seems. There were a lot of people who definitely rallied around her, and it seems like she's gained even more of a following because of this, and I'm glad that there is a positive to come out of it. What I am still upset about is the fact that this sort of thing still happens to women at tournaments. And I guess where I'm coming from is that, you know, I have a good friend who's been playing Magic since about 2010, 2011. And at that time, she would get harassed at tournaments for wearing tank tops. And she would have men, opponents or spectators, tell her that she shouldn't be wearing certain things and that she was asking for attention, so on and so forth, when really she was just there to play Magic and have fun like everybody else. And I guess what I find most upsetting about this whole situation is that it's, what, 5-6 years later, and I like to think that we've come so much further as a community, and we have in a lot of respects, but it bothers me that this sort of thing still keeps happening.
Yeah, this hit a lot of my, as the kids say, my triggers, or push my buttons. You know, there were just a number of things like class, respect, you know, things like that that really kind of set me off. And I had a number of thoughts about this, and I took a minute to write them down on Facebook, and I just wanted to make sure I had them where I could kind of read them. But, you know, the main thing that bothered me about this is that, you know, when you say things like that you have to, that she wore a tank top to get attention, you're assuming that she has to even resort to that to get attention. If you go on Tumblr, if you go on Instagram, if you go on Twitter, you will see stories from women who were harassed, who were catcalled, and a lot of times they'll post a picture with what they were wearing at the time, and a lot of the time they're fully clothed. They're in scarves and jackets and pants. When I go to work, you know, I go to work and I'm dressed as per an office dress code. So you might see some wrist. You might see some calf if I'm wearing some capris, but, you know, I'm in a pea coat. I'm wearing a thick coat when I go to work, and I've still had guys come up to me on the bus and be like, "Sup, girl?" Like, I'm not doing anything. Like, you could be wearing anything, and if somebody's really determined to objectify you, they're gonna find a way regardless. And so, you know, when people say things like, you need to have class, they're basically saying that you deserve whatever happens to you for dressing like that. You know, and I'm using my finger quotations for that. And if you would just wear what you're supposed to, you wouldn't be called an attention whore, and you wouldn't have people taking screenshots of you. It's putting all the emphasis on the woman to be the bigger person, instead of going, if you can't handle yourself around a tank top, that's a you thing. Like, that's not a me thing. You know, and what folks don't understand is that you deserve to be treated with respect no matter what you're wearing. To bring it back to guys, I remember when Crackgate happened, and personally, I'm not a fan of the butt cracks and the belt thing. But do I think that those people deserved to have pictures taken without their consent and put all over the internet and critiqued on news websites? I don't. You know, those guys deserve to sit down at a table, shuffle their 75, and play a good game of Magic, regardless of what they're wearing, regardless of how I feel about what parts are showing. They don't deserve to be treated any differently because of that, you know, to go along with the equality factor. And the last thing is that this is just one more thing that we have to think about when we go to Magic events. You know, a guy can go to a GP and wear whatever the fuck. You know, he can wear a Pikachu hat, he can wear a shirt that doesn't quite cover his tummy, you know, he can wear socks and sandals, and it's totally fine. But when we get dressed for events, we have to ask ourselves, okay, if I wear this, is someone going to accuse me of just wanting attention? If I wear that, is someone going to say that I'm uptight, or am I prudish? On top of all the other things that we have to worry about, you know, are we prepared enough? Safety, security, the metagame. What if I don't know anybody at this GP? Well, now you've got to add my clothing to the list. And that's a lot. Like, that's a big pile of burden that we now have. And, you know, this just bothered me on a number of angles. And I just, you know, Chris handled it better than I did. Like, I mean, I was just like, fuck you. Like, fuck you, fuck your mama, fuck your hair, fuck your teeth, fuck everything about you. I just had nothing nice to say about it, and I still don't. And I kind of had the same opinion of Hallie. Like, why are we still here? Like, how, you know, have we made no progress? And yet, you know, people like this still exist. And it was just, it was very frustrating.
I mean, what does this guy do when he goes to, like, the grocery store? Like, do you see a girl that's in, like, a tank top and sweatpants, and you're like, excuse me, miss, there's children here. Like, who does that? Like, I hope no one, especially not our listeners, please don't do that.
Well, let's just say that, like, even... Oh, sorry.
Why does it apply to Magic and, you know, not anywhere else? Like, thank God it doesn't anywhere else. But, like, why is this an issue that seems to crop up just in, like, this gaming society? I don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, to be fair, I think it does happen in society at large, but I think it's just sort of this was the first time. I admit that I don't experience it at large because I don't really keep those kind of people around me. But, you know, this was the first time that, you know, this was obviously somebody I didn't know who kind of snuck through. But one of my friends on Facebook brought up a really good point. He was like, you know, there are no young children at home who watched the stream and then lost their minds because they saw cleavage. Like, they didn't see her cleavage and then join a cult or develop a drug habit. Like, what kind of powers do you think that we have? Like, I'm flattered that you think this, but, like, just these ludicrous things where it's like, what do you think kids do? Like, I, you know, there were just so many of these cliche lines. Like I said, you know, be classy, have respect, think of the children, you know, things that are just really played out. And it's just like, are we really still saying this to people in 2016? Like, it was just, it was mind-boggling.
Right. And for me, the other thing is, why has it got to be about you? Why does what I do have anything to do with you. If I wore a tank top that shows my cleavage, you're offended. But if I didn't show you my boobies, you'd be upset. Like, you feel like you can't win. And I just think that's kind of shitty.
Yeah, I couldn't help but wonder if part of the reason that he got upset, or even when guys in general get upset, is because it's not about them. You know, like, if you choose to wear a nice, like, let's say you're going out with your girls, and you get, and let's say you like your boobs. Let's say you got great boobs, and you're like, I'm going to wear a sequin tank top, but I'm not wearing it for anybody other than me. If it's just like, I just want to go out, and I want to feel cute, and I'm not here to get laid, and I'm not here to get free drinks, I'm not here to get attention, you know, I wonder how much of that plays into it, that they're mad that you are doing it for you. Like, you know, you're wearing a tank top because you want to wear a tank top. You're not wearing a tank top to get the attention. And it's some kind of like cyclical argument where it's like they don't like you for doing it for attention. But when you clearly say that I'm not in it for the attention, I think that makes you mad too. Like you said, Chris, because it's not about them. Mm-hmm. Like when you have a woman who's just proud of what she has and she's like, I want to wear this for me, it drives certain people crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like Chris said, she wears tank tops a lot. And you know what? That tank top was a really nice color on it. So, I mean...
Really? I'm not mad. I mean, same thing with Emma. I know Emma just joined a magic team called Disciples of Bolas, which is helmed by Ali Antrazi, and they have these really great matching hoodies. And Emma's is the sole non-white one. Like, they're all white. And Emma has, like, this really cool, like, pink one. And when I saw her feature match, I was like, you better work, Emma, with your pink hoodie outfit. Like, I'm not even mad. Like... So it made me very happy to see her kind of buck the trend and do her. And she insisted on that one, too. She was like, I'm not wearing a white hoodie. So God bless Emma Handy. There was a discussion that recently came up. It's kind of been bubbling below the surface, but I don't think it really kind of blew up until today. I saw it first brought up by Melissa DeTora, and then Paulo asked about it on Twitter. The debate about the term manland versus creature land. And, you know, while we are on the subject of equality and trying to, you know, add terms to make things more inclusive, you know, do we think that this is it time? Like, is it time to start calling these lands, like, Mutavault creature lands? Hallie, you said you had some thoughts on this. Yeah,
I did. I mean, the term manland doesn't personally offend me. That was the question that Paula posed on Twitter. You know, women, do you find this offensive? Does this bother you? Do you prefer creature lands? My answer to that would be no, it doesn't bother me at all. I mean, we've been calling them manlands for so long that it's just kind of part of the vernacular. And you know what? It even rhymes. It sounds catchy. It sticks in your brain. So that's just sort of what I'm used to calling it, and I do call them manlands from time to time just out of habit, but, you know, creature lands is fine, too. Creature lands is a more inclusive term, and, you know, I recognize that, you know, as we were saying, it's not all about you. It's not all about me. It doesn't offend me that they're called creature land, that they're called manlands, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't offend another person, and so... I'm willing to talk about, you know, I'm willing to use the term that includes the most people and makes the most people feel comfortable. That being said, though, I mean, I think it's not the worst thing in terms of when we're talking about using gendered terms in Magic. There are gendered terms in the game that bother me. This is not one of them. So there are a lot of things in our vernacular that we need to fix, and this is a good place to start, but I hope it keeps going further.
Yeah, my personal, the one that kind of bothers me is King of the Hill.
Yes.
I remember...
That is my soapbox thing, too.
I remember, I think it was either last year or the year before, I was getting ready to go to GP Worcester. And I think it was almost 2 years ago. That was the summer that my mom died. I couldn't go to Worcester because my mom passed away. And I remember one of the selling points was that I guess they had a throne. Like this was when Modern Masters had just come out. So they had the Dark Confidant throne. And they were like, you know, you can get your picture taken and be king of the event. And I was like... what if I want to be queen of the event? And then they were like, I was just like, do you not expect women to show up? Like, what's going on here? And, you know, anytime I see that happen where it's like, you can be king of the GP or you can be king of the hill. And, you know, when I hear things like that, to me, that implies that you don't even think we're going to show up. And it's just like, you just assume that it's going to be dudes. You assume that it's going to be a dude who's doing well enough to claim the title. And so I would really like to hear that be done away with. Like, you know, maybe call it the, you know, survival of the fittest or something, and you were, and then that's kind of weird too, but it's like, you know, just something that's not that, because it's just like, really, king? Like, ugh.
Yeah, they use that a lot as the place where the person with the best record at the Pro Tour typically sits in the feature match area, mm-hmm. and they've been using that term in coverage for a while now, and the thing I
that irks me the most about it is that there's this sort of implication, which I'm sure is unintentional, that, you know, this is a place where men sit and women don't belong here. And that's really, that really just gives me a weird feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, on the manlands, I feel like I'm like Hallie, where it's not something that bothers me. I feel like things like saying you got raped is like a bigger, you know, deal to me personally. And just things like that that are really ingrained in our culture, the gaming culture, that I would like to see fixed. But if somebody was like, hey, could you call it Creature Land? I'd be like, for sure, I can do that, because I'm a decent person and I don't mind altering my behavior to make you more comfortable. But yeah, the term manland itself doesn't bother me. I just feel like there's some bigger battles to fight, but that doesn't mean that, you know, multiple battles can't be fought at once.
Yeah, yeah, I think we talked about that on a previous show. We think we used the term like stress bubbles or something like that, where we said that, Katie, I think you coined the phrase where it's like, you know, there's this bubble and then this bubble and there's enough bubbles to kind of go around, or you can even merge the bubbles. And I'm kind of in the same boat as you. You know, I personally don't mind man lands. I personally tend to say, when I'm playing Magic Online, I tend to say an 8-man event or a two-person event, but for whatever reason, I keep saying 8-man. And, you know, for me, it's like it doesn't bother me, but I certainly understand that it bothers other people. And, you know, kind of like you said, it's like, you know, if it's not hard to do, you know, where it's like, it's not hard to take that extra second to think about what you're going to say. And I'm always so amused when these conversations and these discussions happen, because people make it sound like it's so damn hard. Like, I think somebody in today's conversation brought up like syllables and was like, it's an extra syllable. It's just like, really? Like, you're going to let a syllable, this is the hill you want to die on. Like, okay. And, you know, just some of the excuses that I see, there was one young man who even went so far as to say, you know, women weren't warriors in the time of magic initially, so why are we working so hard to make them a thing now? Or why are we working so hard to include them? And I was just like, oh girl, like, these are the excuses that people use. And, you know, I can say, as somebody who's certainly, you know, there are words that I have managed to almost expunge from my vocabulary completely. And it definitely takes effort, but is it so, I don't think it's that hard. And so I'm always really amused when people are like, I just can't do it. And it's like, yeah, you can. If you really want to, you can. The last thing we're going to talk about before we tackle our listener question is a video that I sent you guys. I saw this on Twitter the other day, and I thought it was really fascinating. There was a website called Fusion.net, and they had a video called The Trials of a Female Esports Champion. And the video revolved around a young lady named Hafu Chan. Hafu started out as being a top-ranked World of Warcraft player as a teenager, and now she's 24 years old, and she plays Hearthstone. She streams full-time. Like, she quit college to do this. This is how she makes her living. And she was basically talking about what she goes through as being a visible woman in esports, and sort of talking about the landscape and the environment, the comments that she receives. And they were just talking about the current demographic of esports, because esports is taking off faster than any of us can even, you know, really keep up with, and saying that the Twitch users, 95% of Twitch users are estimated to be men, and how the esports community is trying to make it more inclusive. But, you know, just some of the things, I thought this video was really well done. You know, and there was a part in the video where she was talking about how the harassment got to her, and she said at one point, when you have 70,000 people watching your stream, which 70,000 people, like, holy shit, mm-hmm. and all you see is terrible things about you, you think to yourself, why do I bother? Why am I competing? And the most frustrating part of the story was, she said that she went to an event and the team that she was playing against was called something like, we're going to rape Hafu at regionals. And it was just like, what the fuck? And
so disgusting.
So much fuckery. And, like, you know, what did you guys think about this? Like, were you aware of this side of the culture?
I figured something similar had to exist. I mean, I've kind of poked around in, like, the fighting game scene in and of itself, and that seems to have like a layer of that within it. And even just from watching various Twitch streams, you know, for, you know, different people, you can see, you know, some of the comments that people say, and it's just kind of awful that people spend so much of their time on the internet trying to make other people feel like shit. And, you know, I just think of when I was, like, in sixth grade. I'm like, wow, the internet's this thing, and I can connect with people from all over the world that have similar interests to mine, and, you know, this is going to be so awesome. And then you think of how people use it now, and most of it is just to troll each other and be dicks, and I just don't understand where that gets you. I mean, I'm happy that she has, you know, plenty of good viewers that, you know, are respectful, but she said even some of the people that give her money, you know, on Twitch will say shitty things. It's like, why in the same breath as giving someone money would you say something, like, disparaging to them? Like, I don't understand that. And I just find it unfortunate that there are people that feel the need to be, you know, disrespectful and, you know, try to pull people down instead of congratulating them on their accomplishments and acknowledging them for, you know, the things that they are good at.
Just to clarify, so I'm reading the article, she was 17 years old and the team was called Gonna Rape Hafu at Regional. So imagine being 17 years old and you're doing something that you love at the highest level and you see that a team has formed. And more importantly, how did nobody in the organizational body say anything about that? Like, it would be like going to a two-headed, it would be like going to a team tournament, a team sealed event, and calling your team that and having the judges and everybody completely not even care. Like, that blew my mind that that was even allowed to happen.
I've definitely thought, like, why am I doing this with Magic? And I kind of went through a period where I was not attracted to the game anymore because of the people that played it. And it's like, you know, you get all these little microaggressions and you get people making the snide comments and the people that are commenting on what you're wearing and the people that are just being dicks. And it's like, after a while, it's like, do I love this game enough to continue on in spite of the people when the reason I started it was for the people? Like, it's just really frustrating that this, our culture is so, and I think it is getting better, so I don't want to make it sound like, you know, it's all bad, but I felt like in that interview when she was like, I got to this point where I was like, why am I doing this? It kind of still seemed like some of that was lingering. Like, at the end of it, she was talking about that she does love it and whatnot, but I wasn't totally convinced that it was something she had moved past, and I don't feel like it's something you can move past when you have an extreme chat that's just, you know, being rude. It's why watch? Like, if it's something you don't like, don't watch it. I just, it boggles my mind.
Well, it seems a lot harder to walk away from when it's your job. You know, I'm not saying that she deserves it because she's staying or anything, but, you know, when you're doing a group stream like we do, when it's once a month, and we've been very fortunate that we haven't received anything like this, and as far as I know, you know, Athena hasn't seen anything, Mrs. Mulligan hasn't seen, it seems like we're really lucky as a Magic community. Like, I feel like we haven't really experienced this, and that's not to say never, but, you know, not nearly on that scale. You know, but it just, yeah, I had a train of thought and I just totally lost it. Oh, yeah, but it's one thing when you're doing it for fun, like when you're just streaming for the lulz, but it's another when, like, she quit college to do this. So even if she was kind of upset, what is she supposed to do? Like, you know, just go back to school, you know? You get used to the attention, you get used to the money, you get used to the freedom to sleep in a little bit. And there's also the feeling of letting people win, you know? If you do go back to school, there's this feeling of they won, I let them get to me. And so, you know, I can understand just the conflicting emotions that she might be feeling of, like, this really, really sucks, but I can't walk away now. You know, there's so much on the line and I don't want them to win. And I can't imagine what she's going through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know the thing she said that stuck with me the most was that women in this industry are required to have a very thick skin. And I don't think that should be a requirement at all. I think it should be a requirement that, you know, everyone be a decent human being. And if you don't have anything nice to say, just don't say it. But I mean, this is something that I have dealt with from time to time while I was streaming. I mean, 99% of the people who comment on my stream are nice, supportive people who either listen to the show or have read my work and, you know, support me. But, you know, every once in a while you get someone who harasses you, and I have learned that I need to have a thick skin and I just ignore it. I just pretend it's not there. But you know, there are some times when, you know, you try really hard to pretend that nothing's happening, and even though you're not verbally acknowledging it, you can kind of feel your posture changing, or your there are little ways that, you know, it's affecting you, and the people who are watching can tell it's affecting you. And it's really tough. I mean, I had someone say something kind of rude to me on stream a week or two ago, and I had to take a couple days off and just be like, I need to refocus. So it's definitely a thing that women deal with, and it's really unfortunate.
Ugh. All right, let's turn the boat around. So our listener question this week, it wasn't actually submitted to us as the girlfriend bracket, but it was brought up in our ultra fun Facebook group, Ladies on the Grind. So again, if you want to join the Facebook group, please do so. We're always willing to take on more women and compare notes and root each other on. Also, shout out to Serena Quinn, who top aided her RPTQ.
You go, girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She got to the quarterfinals, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, goddamn queen, hello. And she was so hard on herself. I just wanted to be like, Serena, like, you're at the RPTQ, like, girl. So keep up the good work, Serena. We're all very proud of you. Our friend Carolyn had posted a question of the group, and we thought it would be fun to kind of address it here. And this was Carolyn's story. So she says, as I invest more time and energy into magic, playtesting, traveling for events, and more, I have created in my mind a list of expectations. When I accomplish one thing, I move on to the next, kind of like a ladder. My ladder started last summer, where I hit up 6 of the 8 possible PPTQs in my area. My first goal was to make top 8, which I did 4 out of the 6 times, which is awesome. Just throwing that out there. After that happened, I wanted to win one altogether. By the end of summer, I had achieved my goal, but not in the same PPTQ season. From there, I kept this idea of a ladder in my head. I started looking at more GPs, playing MTGO more, and reading articles. My next rung was to make day 2 at a GP, which I did earlier this year. This past weekend, I started to think that I was wrong in seeing my grind as a ladder. I went to a PPTQ on Sunday, but felt that I created a false sense of entitlement for myself because I had already climbed the winning a PPTQ rung and just assumed that I would do it again. I got so nervous about not winning while playing in the finals that, of course, I didn't win. I made a very careless error in game 3 and punted. That's not to say that the game was a lock for me or to say that my opponent didn't deserve it, but I did have a chance and I screwed up. Should I continue to prep for high-stakes events, like playtesting a specific matchup or prepare a sideboard guide so that this won't happen again, or should I just accept that these are nerves and that they will go away with repetition and keep on trucking?
Oh, man. So, Carolyn is a good friend of mine, and, you know, we sort of found each other because, you know, we live not too far away from each other, and we're on about a similar level, and we have very similar goals. And, you know, when she posted this, I related to a lot of what she was saying. One of the things that I've been trying to work on right now is putting less pressure on myself at events, because I've found that, you know, like Carolyn, I'm a very goal-oriented person, and once I get to one rung of the ladder, I just assume I'm going to stay there or surpass it. And that's not how magic works sometimes. Like, you know, there is a degree of variance and a degree of luck that goes along with the games, and even though I try not to focus on that sometimes because I try to focus on the things I can change and the things I can control, that's always going to be there, and you're always going to have a bad tournament, and you can't beat yourself up about it. And, you know, like she says, there are times when you do put a lot of pressure on yourself and your nerves end up, you know, negatively affecting the way you play. One thing that I've tried to do personally is to keep reminding myself to have fun when I play Magic. I know I wrote about this in my Fearless Inventory thing, but I obviously care a lot about competing and I care about doing well, but I try to make sure that I'm there for other reasons, that I'm playing a deck that I really like or a deck that suits my playstyle. You know, I'm there with friends. I have all these other good things going for me or other good things going on that weekend so that it's not a make or break kind of situation. Like, if I have a bad tournament, if I have a bad match, I'm not going to dwell on it, and I'm not going to feel like everything I do is, you know, contingent on that. So that's something that I've tried to work on, but like I said, I'm kind of in the same boat, so I'm, you know, looking for advice on this as well.
Yeah, I used to be the exact same way, as Carolyn. Like, I keep this running tally just kind of in my head where I'm like, okay, I've top-aided 9 of the last 11 competitive tournaments I've played, and I wore that as a you know, a badge of pride for a long time, and I am proud of it, but now I'm trying to view it more as, like, just a fact. Like, this is something that, you know, this is my record, and that's okay, but if I lose, that's also okay. You know, I try and get the most out of every match, and it's super hard to change your perception of Magic, because I think a lot of people, including pros, do get that sense of entitlement, like, you know, I've done this before, I should be able to do this again. And, you know, if you're doing a skill like that, like a physical skill, oftentimes that's, you know, how it is. Like, if you're doing a sport, like, and you hit a home run or whatever, like, odds are you'll be able to do that again. But in Magic, there's so much variance that that's not a realistic expectation, even though a lot of people place it on themselves as one. And so it's really hard to, I think, change that view of yourself, like, and have no expectations going into a tournament. And what she said about, you know, should I test certain matchups? Should I, will my nerves just go away? I think all of those things are true. Like, I think testing whatever matchups are difficult is good. I think a sideboard guide can be helpful. But I also think that being in a top eight repeatedly for something that you really want is the best way to learn how to deal with those nerves. And sometimes, you know, that repetition can be difficult to get, but I think it is really important. And if you lose in a top eight, that doesn't mean you'll never top eight again. You know, you might not top eight the next one or the one after that, but it'll happen again. And I think just having that practice and viewing it as a really valuable resource is really important to getting better at the game.
Wow, I definitely agree with both of you. I can't say that I've ever done exceptionally well myself. I mean, I've won a few FNMs, and I, like, placed, like, 24th, I think, out of, like, 200 at a PPTQ before. Those are, like, the feathers in my cap. But, you know, I think that it's good that she has been more confident in herself, because I do think that that is key. To be like, you know, I can do this. I've done it before. There's no reason I can't do it again. And I do think that practice is also important. I think it always is, especially if you plan, you know, to grind many events, if you want to, you know, eventually maybe even be on the pro tour. Those are all good things to do. But like Katie said, Magic is a game of variance. You know, you're not always going to be on top. And, you know, that was something that I had to learn when I was losing really, really, really badly. And, you know, just trying to have, not necessarily just fun, but just try to go into it with no expectations. Be like, you know, if I do well, you know, great. You know, can I make it through the next round? You know, that's what I've been trying to do, is just be in the moment. And I feel like I personally have been doing better by being that kind of person. And I think that's something that she could take away, is just to focus on the now. And if you end up, you know, in the top eight, you know, awesome. You know, you did it again. You know, as long as you keep on producing, you know, good results, eventually, you know, you might win the next PPTQ. You might, you know, win an RPCQ. You know, it's just one of those things that it's either your time or it's not. But being down on yourself because it hasn't happened again doesn't mean it never will.
Yeah, I think you guys brought up several good points. I think the advice that I would give her is that, you know, we all agree that variance is a thing, and that variance is the one thing that you really can't help. You know, you can do everything right and still get mana flooded or still get mana screwed and things like that. So take away as many things as you can that variance can affect. You know what I mean? Where it's like, I would write the sideboard guide. I would make sure that your deck is packed with just good cards. You know, sometimes you hear those people say, oh, well, you got a lucky top deck. And a lot of times the response is, well, my deck is full of good cards. So you hear that a lot of times with like the Jun decks and types of decks like that. You know, think about that. Is this a card I want to draw in the late game? Is this a card that's going to be dead to me? I play a lot of high variance decks myself. You know, I play Dredge and I play Ad Nauseam. And so one of the things I've learned from playing those decks is that, you know, I may very well have a bad dredge. You know, I may put 75% of my library in my graveyard and not see a single Narcomoeba. And that's variance. That's something I absolutely can't help. But what I can do to sort of meet myself halfway is to make my deck as consistent as possible. So I play what's called a quad laser build. So it's like, okay, I want 4 Icarids, I want 4 whatever. Kind of going over the math in my head where it's like, okay, so even if I do dredge and I see this many cards, you know, just kind of giving myself as few opportunities as possible for variance to hurt me. And that way, if variance does kind of go through all of those things, at least I really can say there was really nothing I could have done, or there was very little I could do, you know, and just come up with as few situations as possible that I can't help. If I'm having problems sideboarding, make a sideboard guide. If I'm really sensitive to people being around me and I get really nervous, which I do, being able to ask people, could you maybe step aside a little bit so I can play? You know, just knowing what I can fix and what I can actually affect and what I can't has been really helpful for me. And so that's kind of what I would suggest to you, is just knowing what you can change and what you can't. I think there's a Bible verse about that, isn't it? God, give me the grace to change the things I can't. I'm not.
Except the things I.
There we go. But except it's worth. So it's like worth, you know, give me the strength to. I'm alone here. It's fine.
That's something they do in a lot of recovery situations, is God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
There you go. Yeah, just apply that to magic. So we've got some events coming up this weekend. Hallie, you're going to be in Houston. Mm-hmm. Okay. Chris and I are going to a 1K on Saturday, yay, which should be a lot of fun. Kate, are you playing this weekend at all?
I haven't decided. I might do a stream on Friday and then maybe go to FNM.
Do it.
Yes.
Your streams are fun. I had a lot of fun watching you the other night, and I was totally creeping in your stream, too. Like, I was in bed, and I saw that you were streaming. We had just finished recording, and I was like, I'm going to click on her link and watch it from my phone. And I try not to barge into streams, because a lot of times people will see my name, and I feel like the chat kind of becomes about me, and I don't want to steal anyone's thunder. So I didn't log into the chat. I was totally anonymous, and I was like, I'm just going to watch Katie right here. And your chat seemed like it was a lot of fun. You had your guys around you. They were really good energy. Watson was with you, and it was a really enjoyable stream. So I hope you keep streaming.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. My moto skills still need work, but I'm slowly but surely learning how to not click through important things.
very cool. Yeah, I did that the other day too. I was I had a bunch of Icarid triggers, and I got kind of click happy, and I was like, shit, I meant to bring back an Icarid. So I've done that before too.
Okay.
If anybody's listening and they've enjoyed the show, how can they find you all, and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at Halcansan. That's HalCansan. You can watch me on Twitch at twitch.tv/Halcansan, and you can find my writing here on Gathering Magic.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at Mean Mugger. That's MeanMugger. Or you can watch me on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG. Or you can find me by email, katie.neil14@gmail.com.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTHKRIZ@gmail.com. And my Snapchat, as Katie knows, is Cryptic Command. Felt with K's.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Asterisk. That's OriginalOestrus. You can email me personally at estrus@elitistjerks.com. The show is on Twitter at the GF Bracket. That is also our Twitch name if you want to go back and see the stream that we did yesterday. And you can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.